Welcome into the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. First of all, I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, one and all, whether you be with family later today or you're by yourself. I'm glad to be able to bring you a show today. I know in the good old days of radio, and our guest today is one of those guys who's been in the good old days of radio. We always had a show or had something to do on Thanksgiving. We always had to run into the station and do a show. Generally, we were running away from the table or about to run to the table, one or the other. And I have fond memories of doing shows on Thanksgiving. So it's no stranger to be able to do a show for you on Thanksgiving. And I really am thankful for you guys, each and every one of you that listens to the show on a daily basis. So I'm glad that I can be here with you on this glorious holiday. And I give thanks for each and every one of you for listening to the show. Every time there's a download in your box and ready for you, I'm glad that you're there and that you're enjoying the show and that you give us your feedback and your stories is what I look forward to. By the way, on Wednesdays on Supernatural News and Parashare, if you have a story for us, just drop it in my inbox, tim@darknessradio.com, or go to the website, darknessradioshow.com, and click on that blue button on the right-hand side there, and you can leave a voice note. Leave that voice note for us. 2-minute loop on that voice note. And again, if you need to string them together, just keep hitting that blue button and I'll edit that story together. Just pick up where you left off and we'll go ahead and string that story together and we'll air it on Wednesday's show. And then Beer City Bruiser and I will weigh in on it if you wish. If not, we'll just let it roll and the audience can hear it. We'd like to hear your stories, your encounters with the supernatural and the strange. Let's get to today's show, shall we? And then at the end of the show today, I'll weigh in on the holiday itself and let you know what I'm thankful for as well. Our guest today, and I had the pleasure of sitting down and reading a really cool book over the last couple of days. It has to do with Kinderhook, New York, in the Northeast. Our guest is Bruce G. Hallenbeck. He's an author and actor and screenwriter whose films include Vampire, Fangs, and the Drowned, and whose many books on film history include The Hammer, Frankenstein, Rock and Roll Monster, The American International Story, and Poe Pictures. He's also a cryptozoologist, having written Monsters of New York, co-written Monsters of New Jersey with Lauren Coleman, and co-written Monsters of the Northwoods with William Brann, Paul Bartholomew, and Robert Bartholomew. Hallenbeck has also acted in such features as Shadow Tracker, Edge of Reality, and Project Declassified. He lives in upstate New York with his wife, Rosa, four cats, and several ghosts, which is quite interesting and is in the book, which, again, fascinating. The Kinderhook Creature and Beyond, A Personal Reminiscence is by Bruce G. Hallenbeck. It's available on Small Town Monsters Publishing, and we'll have a link in the description of the show so you can pick it up. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, Bruce Hallenbeck. Bruce, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine and dandy. How are you, sir?
Doing really well and getting better. I had the pleasure of sitting with this book, and you know, there's a few moments in this book, I got to tell you, Bruce, that really did touch me. I feel like we've almost lived some parallel lives here. You know, before the podcast, I guess we can, truth in advertising, we can tell people before the show, we're talking a little media business. We both have some background in radio, and mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice to talk to a fellow media guy and
yes.
You know, tell people a little bit, kind of, you know, you bring up your upbringing, in the book. And so tell us a little bit about Kinderhook in itself and your upbringing in Kinderhook. Because I'll tell you something, there's something interesting in this book. And I'm going to jump a little bit ahead here in the story that you and I have in common as well, other than media, and it's this. It has to do with the way you were raised, and I'll just leave it at that. Okay. and go from there. I'll just leave that little hint, and we'll discuss it when you're done.
Okay, well, I was raised by my grandparents. Mm-hmm. Long story, which is in the book, but my actual birth parents are still alive. But it was just, you know, they were very young at the time and when I was born, and I became very close to my grandmother. And so I, in fact, I'm speaking from my grandparents' house. That's where I live with my wife and the ghosts and the cats. Kinderhook is kind of a ghostly town, in the sense that it's one of the places where, Washington Irving based the legend of Sleepy Hollow. Most people assume it's, farther south, Tarrytown, New York, which part of which is called Sleepy Hollow. But, actually, Washington Irving lived in Kinderhook for a while and based all the characters in Legend of Sleepy Hollow on actual people who lived here. Ichabod Crane, for example, was a school teacher named Jesse Merwin, who was buried here. And Katrina Van Tassel, who he lusted after in the story, was actually Katrina Van Allen. And the Van Allen house is just down the road from where I live. So when I was a kid, I was always kind of interested in the local stories and also interested in monsters of all sorts, whether they were monsters in the movies, and I've written several books about those, mm-hmm. or later on I found out about, you know, cryptozoological type monsters. I read a book called The Maybe Monsters when I was in sixth grade, and that kind of got me onto the fact that, maybe there could be real monsters. So I started kind of exploring that. And when I was a kid, I had some experiences actually that are in the book that I still can't explain. And so did several people in my family and, you know, people in town in general. So it's Kinderhook is kind of a mystical, magical place.
You know, Bruce, again, I bring up the way you're raised and what we have in kind of in common. And what's kind of funny is I think you're probably about maybe 10 to 12 years older than I am. And we won't reveal ages because it's not polite in public, I guess. But
I'm actually 103.
Oh, that's a little more than 10 to 12. but what's interesting is in my decade, I guess, I'm a child of divorce. So I guess my parents were kind of a little self-absorbed in what was going on with them at the time. And that's not being mean. That's just being real. Yeah. But my grandparents were of the World War II generation. So they didn't want to, one, I think they didn't want to let their grandchildren slip through the cracks. That was one. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily go live with them, but I did have a lot of weekends over there, a lot of more weekends over there than not. And then my grandfather would come pick me up. I had one grandfather that came and lived with us. That was my mother's father. So he stayed in the house with us and he really raised us.
Yeah.
And then my father's parents would come get us for weekends. And my father's father was like, he was like my big buddy, you know, he would come get me and take me everywhere, you know. So it was really that generation that looked after us because they knew that if they didn't, nobody else would. And so, and it's not that way necessarily with you. It was more your choice, the way that I understand it from the book. You were given a choice.
It actually was, yeah. And the book is dedicated to my grandmother. And she's a very large part of the book, as you know, having read it. She and I experienced a lot of things together that were strange and things that we couldn't explain. And she ended up being one of the biggest witnesses, most important witnesses to the Kinderhook creature itself. So, you know, I owe a lot to her.
And we'll talk about that in a second here, too. One of the things that really touched me, and if we can talk about it here for a second, I will in just a moment. What's interesting, too, about the whole way that you were raised, and what I really loved about the relationship with your grandmother, it was so deep. And like you just mentioned, there was that link between the here and now, it seemed like always with you. So supernatural things were not something that was swept under the rug. It was something that it seemed like it was, even if it wasn't easily explainable, at least the two of you could talk about it. I'm wondering, Bruce, if you can just flesh this out for our audience a little bit. tell me why it seemed like she had such an easy time with it and it wasn't something to be pushed aside. What was it about your grandmother, why she was so open with all of this?
Well, I think she was open-minded in general. You know, people always say that you become more conservative as you get older, but she was actually very liberal-minded. She also was very open to, I think, the supernatural in a sense. She didn't say that she was a big believer in that sort of stuff, but if something happened that she couldn't explain, she wouldn't pass it off. And she wouldn't say, well, this, we must have imagined it or something. She would just kind of go with the flow. You know, like, for example, when we were having dinner and there was a dish of corn that moved across the table all of a sudden and stopped at the very edge. And she just looked at me and said, well, that happened. That was strange. I mean, she had a great sense of humor, first of all. But I think, in a way, she was a little bit psychic. I think first of all, she was very wise, and she had a tendency to know, you know, people right away when she met them. She knew what kind of people they were and blah, blah, blah. But beyond that, I think she had a certain amount of second sight, and she never claimed to. She never really talked about that, but that's my personal feeling.
There's a little bit in the book, and if I can we talk about it for a second? And that is when your grandmother passed, and there's just one particular passage I want to talk about, because I think I can explain a little bit about what happened that particular day and what you might have seen. And I know you already referred to one friend about it, but I've had a similar experience, and I had a guest on not too long ago who explained a little bit about what it was you might have seen. So there's a story in the book, and it's I shouldn't say story, it's an actual experience, where you and your now wife had a bit of an argument. And if you want to pick it up from there, you can tell our audience what it was that happened.
Well, when my wife and I first got together, we were kind of like, we didn't get married until we were in our 40s. And so we were pretty much used to being alone, and we had our own kind of set of rules of things that we did. And, you know, this is my reality, this is your reality. Didn't always mesh. So anyway, we got into a fight. I don't even remember what the fight was about now. But anyway, she ended up taking off in her car. And strangely enough, the fight had occurred in my grandmother's room, my grandmother's old room. And my grandmother passed away about 7 or 8 years before. So anyway, I was kind of very upset about this fight we had. So I went down in the yard, and we had a picnic table there at the time. And I just kind of sat there and thought about things. And then I happened to look up at the house, and on the second floor in my grandmother's old room, there was a red light that showed up everything in the room. I mean, I could see every little detail that was there. There was a box of a toy that I could see, you know, in this light. And I thought, well, that's strange, because I don't think there's a red light up there that I ever remember. And I tried to think of a rational explanation, like, could it be car tail lights or something showing on the second floor? And I, you know, watched as cars went by, and of course there was nothing like that. They don't reach up that far. And in any case, you know, it was the room that was lit up. It wasn't the window. So I thought to myself, okay, well, this is pretty weird. And I kept looking at it. And to me, the weirdest part was the light suddenly flickered and it went out. And that's when I really got the creeps. So I said, okay, I gotta go up there and look at what's going on. I don't know how I quite got the nerve to do that, because I was really kind of scared, but I went in the house and I slowly went up the stairs and into her old room, and there was no light on. There was no red light anywhere. I knew that. So the whole thing really freaked me out. And I told my wife, Rosa, about it when she got back. And she was kind of, you know, I mean, she's pretty skeptical about these things, but she thought it was pretty strange. Anyway, by the way, we made up and we've been living happily ever since.
Well, that's good. That's wonderful. That's
the most important part.
Right. Exactly. That's what we want to hear. Now, interestingly enough, I read this and automatically my light clicks on in my head and I know exactly what it is you see, even though you said it gives you the creeps, and it should. It's something that you haven't necessarily seen before. But it's something that I myself have seen with my own two eyes. And it's something that I've talked about before on the show, and I'll tell you right now. When I was aboard the Queen Mary, we used to do events with the guys from the Ghost Hunters TV show and with the Ghost Adventures TV show. And we would bring up to 200 people with us at the time, and 200 paid patrons, and we would do huge ghost hunts. And we would stay up till all hours of the night. And of course, you go to bed kind of late. And so I'm sharing a room with Dave Schrader, who's on Travel Channel and does his own shows there. And he's got one bunk. I've got another. And we were laughing and we were up late and we had something really to eat. And it was probably about 4 in the morning. And we had the giggle fits because we were joking back and forth. And he's laying in his bed, I'm laying in mine, and we're shooting jokes back and forth. And we're laughing hysterically. And you know what happens when you get that manic energy going, how it's just infectious?
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, I've got my glasses off because I'm wearing glasses. A lot of people know that. You know that, Bruce. And I look at the ceiling and I see this red ball of light. And I'm like, I got to be just delirious. So I grab my glasses. Right. I'm fumbling for my glasses. And I yell at Dave. I said, hey, D, look, you got to look real quick. Turn over and look at the ceiling. And he goes, oh, just go to sleep. I went, no, look. And I'm looking at this red orb that's dancing around on the ceiling. And I thought, my God, what is that? And it's dancing around almost like it's enjoying the little back and forth that Dave and I are having. And as I notice it and I'm pointing at it, it just zips away and zips through the wall. And I thought, oh my God, what did I just see there? That had to be some sort of spirit, right? That was just enjoying the back and forth of us laughing.
Sounds like it.
And just wanted to be involved. Just thought it was a good time. Now, I had a guest on the show not too long ago, and we were talking about, I forget which culture it is, believes that when the soul leaves the body, when one dies, it leaves the body in a... Oh, I know. It was Ronnie LeBlanc, who's on one of the Bigfoot shows on TV. I forget the culture, though. They believe that when the soul leaves the body, it leaves as a colored orb, whether it be an orange or a red orb. And when it leaves, it leaves the body as an orb, and it returns back to its relatives in the form of a colored orb.
Okay.
Now, even though you thought red might have been a sign of anger on Graham's part, I don't think it was. It was the fact that Graham was just coming back intensely and wanted you to know that she was there.
That's as good an explanation as I've ever heard. I would like to think that's true.
And if anything, I know you were probably distraught at that time, sitting at the picnic table as you were, and the fight was quite traumatic, Bruce, and you didn't know what to think. I would like to think that she was there for you at times where things were traumatic. It was probably just her trying to calm you and letting you know that she was there in a time that you were confused and probably hurt.
Well, that is a much better feeling than that she was angry. I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, I truly feel that was it. And when I read that, I went, oh, Bruce, I don't think that was it at all. I don't think she was angry at all. So I knew that was one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about today.
That's nice to know. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, because I knew for a fact, and I've seen these red orbs everywhere in different photos. I've talked to people who have had experiences with these red orbs, they're very physical, and a lot of times they're spirits that just want to interact with people in the physical, in the now. They aren't necessarily relatives, but they're spirits that want to interact for one reason or another because they like the energy of the person that's there at that particular time.
Well, I like that idea. And I also I love the idea of the fact that, you know, maybe we turn into energy after we die, you know, a certain kind of energy that you can see. Mm-hmm. I try to approach these things in a somewhat scientific way. I don't, you know, go off in real supernatural tangents. I've read a lot about quantum physics and things of that sort. And, I think a lot of things can be explained through quantum physics, and there's so much stuff that we don't know yet about, not just about the afterlife, but about this life. I mean, there's so many things that we just don't understand. And that's why I try to keep an open mind about everything.
If you don't mind me prying, what do you believe happens when we die?
I don't know. As I say in the book, I don't really... you know, try to postulate any particular theories about any of this stuff. I'd like to think that after we die, our consciousness continues in some form. And, you know, maybe it's in pure energy. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. To me, it doesn't make sense that we just stop. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but
it
just seems like in this vast universe of ours that we don't even know anything about really beyond the earth, that there must be something else beyond this life, I think.
Right. You know, it's funny because even over the last year, science has started to come around thinking maybe heaven is really a quantum physical dimension.
I've heard that theory.
Yeah, and they've started to come around to the idea of heaven being a step to the left from the dimension that we're in right now.
Yeah, there's a book called After, written by a brain surgeon, actually. Mm-hmm. And he had written about a lot of his patients, you know, on the verge of death, who have had, near-death experiences or even, you know, death experiences and been brought back to life. And they've all told similar stories about this place that they went to. And I like to think that is a real thing. And, you know, we know that there are other dimensions. We know that there could be other universes, parallel universes. Mm-hmm. I mean, the possibilities are endless, really.
Very true. Very true. I tell you what, let's take our break right here. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the other famous resident of Kinderhook, and we'll get a bit into one of the famous hauntings of that residence, and we'll also talk about the other experience your grandmother had that's a little bit famous in Kinderhook as well. You alluded to it earlier. We'll talk about that as well. The book is The Kinderhook Creature and Beyond, A Personal Reminiscence. It's by Bruce G. Hallenbeck, our guest here today. It's put out by Small Town Monsters Publishing. We'll have a link for it in the description of this show. Go ahead and click on that link during the break. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Bruce about the town of Kinderhook, its famous residents, and maybe one of its more infamous ones, coming up next on The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Bruce Hallenbeck. The book is The Kinderhook Creature and Beyond, A Personal Reminiscence. Our guest is Bruce Hallenbeck, as I said. Small Town Monsters Publishing is who's putting out this book. And it is available by just clicking the link in the description of this show. And you can get your hands on it. It's a wonderful book, Bruce, I got to tell you. I took to it right away reading it. Lots of great, not only experiences on your end, but experiences from the area to delve into. And you don't just have to be a fan of one genre or another of the paranormal. There's lots of things to sink your teeth into in this book, and I tip my hat to you, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did, much indeed. Let's talk a little bit about the other famous resident of Kinderhook or the area, former president Martin Van Buren. Can you tell us a little bit about him and the haunting behind him?
Well, Martin Van Buren, his home is called Lindenwald, and it's just down the road from the Van Allen House, which was the home of Katrina Van Tassel. So everything is kind of like in the same mile and a half or 2 miles. Lindenwald is a stately old mansion, and it is reputedly haunted, of course. Martin Van Buren was the 8th president of the U.S. He's buried in Kinderhook. And supposedly his shade, as they say, wanders around the estate every now and then. People have supposedly seen him. It's interesting because Lindenwald is a national historic site. And the guides, the tour guides, they dress up like state police almost. Mm-hmm. They have the hats and all that stuff. And they're very official looking. And they won't talk about this stuff. But if you get them aside, as I did with one or two of them in the past, they will talk about the fact that some strange things happen in Lindenwald. Sometimes they will come in the morning and find that things have been moved around during the night, even though the place has been locked up and nobody can get in there. A couple of times they have found that a bucket of water next to the curtains, as if somebody was washing the curtains, which I thought was interesting. And they smell something cooking in the old ovens, the old Dutch ovens, which haven't been used in like 200 years.
Oh, wow.
People have seen what they take to be some of the slaves who worked there. They've seen Van Buren's children supposedly wandering about. It's a fascinating place, and it's been restored to perfection. It looks exactly the way it did 200 years ago now. Some classic ghosts. We have presidential ghosts in Kinderhook. I think that's a nice bit of snobbery we can put over Tarrytown anyway.
That is a nice piece of snobbery. It's interesting. When you visit places like Gettysburg or even there, in that area with Martin Van Buren's estate, you wonder if it's residual or if it's active or a little bit of both. Especially with the smells in Martin Van Buren's shade, as you put it, some people may try to convince you it's a shadow person. However, with him tending a garden or whatever it is he's doing, it sounds like it's repetitive, like it's almost on a loop, don't you think?
Sort of, because people say that they see him where there used to be an apple orchard there. There isn't one now, but they see him, where the apple orchard was, as if he was, looking up at the apples or picking apples or something. So who knows? I mean, it's whatever it is, it's very interesting. And the Van Allen House just down the road, Katrina Van Tassel's house, also has some stories about it. My wife and I went there a couple of years ago and talked to one of the guides there, and she said that people have heard footsteps upstairs. And there was one occasion where there was an African-American gentleman who went in there, and he suddenly felt trapped, and he had to leave very quickly. And the guide asked him what was wrong, and he said he felt as if, he was back in the time of slavery.
Oh, wow.
That there was some feeling that he got that he couldn't get out. So I thought that was very interesting.
That is, because that can be one of many things. I mean, it's
creepy.
Let me ask you this, Bruce. Have you ever been in a place like that and had that kind of feeling, like you've been overcome?
Not really. Anything that springs to mind. I've been in some places that have spooked me out a bit. But then again, I've had experiences in my own house. So
yeah,
it's kind of like, I guess I'm kind of blasé about it at this point. My grandmother always said that she thought it'd be fun to live in a haunted house. Well, I think she did live in a haunted house, and I'm still living in it right now. So it is kind of fun because you never know what might happen. I mean, my wife, when she first moved in, she said that she saw this little old lady coming out of my grandmother's room, and she described her perfectly, even though at the time I don't think she'd even seen any photos of her. But she described her favorite apron that she used to wear, and you know, the little old lady with the curly hair, and it's great living in a place like this. I mean, it's I've never felt in danger. Okay. I think the creepiest feeling I got was that red light, but I've never actually felt like there was anything malignant here.
Okay.
And in fact, when Rosa first moved in, she felt a warmth that I said, well, that's got to be my grandmother, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
let me ask you this. Is this the same? Now, in your history, we should explain to the listeners, your grandfather didn't live in the house with you, did he?
Well, he did up until he retired.
Okay.
And then when he retired, he set up a tent out in the woods, and he would sleep there. And then when he turned 80, he built a house up in the field, in the back 40, as we call it. He was a character. He was a dowser. He was an interesting guy, something of a painter. He dabbled in painting. He was a strange combination because he was kind of skeptical about the kinder of creature, as we will talk about in a few minutes, I guess. Mm-hmm. But he, on the other hand, he was a water witch, a dowser. And he did find the spring that's down in the woods that is our water source. Mm-hmm. And he also found the well just outside the house that allowed for indoor plumbing in the house. So,
wow.
He was I guess maybe I have a little bit of psychic DNA from both sides of the family, you know?
I would say so, yeah. You know, because your grandfather didn't trust the house. Is that accurate to say?
Well, the reason he moved out in the beginning, he never said why he moved out. He and my grandmother didn't get along terrifically well at that point.
Okay.
I mean, they didn't argue. They just kind of like ignored each other.
Okay.
But the one thing I do remember is that he had, shortly after he retired, he was sleeping in his room upstairs in the house, and he had a terrible dream about a shadow that dragged him into the wall. And shortly after that, he moved out. I don't think that was a coincidence. I think that really bothered him for some reason. And I remember when I was a kid and I slept in that room, I used to have bad dreams too. Why? I don't know. I don't know what it is about that room. But one of my girlfriends, when she came to visit, she would not sleep on the side of the bed facing that room.
Okay.
Because she thought there was something in there. She was frightened of the room. And she had no reason to be that I knew of, but she just didn't like it for some reason. So what it is about that room, I don't know. This house used to be a barn before it was turned into a house in 1942.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And before that, there was another house that was just a little bit down farther toward the road. And that house burned down. And I was never able to get the story of what happened there, if anybody died in that fire.
Okay.
I just haven't been able to find that out.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to say, either somebody died in that that fire, or there's potentially a portal in there. Because it seems to me that there was something there that didn't want your grandfather there, but was friendly towards your grandmother, because your grandmother never felt threatened, did she?
No, she never did. And she was never one to be afraid of anything. I remember there was a time when I was much younger that there were some men, hunters, who came on the property. three of them, and they all had guns. Obviously, they had rifles. Mm-hmm. And somehow they ended up on our property. And my grandmother chased them away with a broom. She just kind of,
wow.
Get out of here.
So, now that takes guts.
She was fearless, yeah.
Yeah.
So no, she was never fazed by any of this stuff, really.
Wow. Yeah. To me, it almost seems like whatever's there was almost protective of her. And so, maybe they didn't like the way your grandfather treated your grandmother.
Well, that's a possibility. I don't know.
It might be. I don't know. Just kind of grasping at straws here, Bruce. I don't know.
Hey, it's as good an explanation as any.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, because as I read the book, and I guess in closing, you described a lot about your grandfather, and as you describe him, he did seem like he had, as he got back to nature and kind of put his feet in the soil, it seemed like he had quite a bit of the psychic DNA in him. And he, the way you describe him, he was very sensitive.
And he was a painter, and he was a pretty decent painter as well. Mm-hmm. He used to keep, when we were cleaning out his old house, when my wife moved in, she was horrified to find like a dead bat in the house because he was using it to sketch, to sketch bats and birds. So yeah, he got back to nature for sure.
A little bit too much. I understand being a model, but you don't need the dead one.
No,
but a live one's hard to train. That's that's the problem. Now let's, speaking of, I guess being one with nature and having supernatural things being able to sidle up to you, there's this creature that we allude to at the beginning of the book and in the title of the book, the Kinderhook creature. Your grandmother had an experience with this. Now explain to us what exactly the Kinderhook creature may or may not be, and take us back to that fateful day when your grandmother has this experience.
Well, actually, she had several experiences, but the creature seems to be like a classic kind of Bigfoot creature, which, is almost embarrassing to relate, but there it is. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1978, I think it was, December of 1978, she happened to be looking out her kitchen window, and she saw this thing curled up in the snow. This was, fairly snowy winter. Mm-hmm. Seemed to be sleeping down at the bottom of the yard. And she said it was large and black. And she just couldn't figure out what it was. She went to do something else. She looked out the window again, and it was gone. And she went outside, and she found some tracks in the snow that were very odd. That were large, and bipedal tracks. At the same time, her trash bags were being taken away from the back porch where she kept them, and they were taken down to the middle of the yard, and something opened them up, not tearing them, but opened them up as if with human hands, and rifling through everything and taking out whatever was edible. That was something that kind of got to her. And it turned out that the next door neighbor was having the same experience, and that she found one of her trash bags up in a tree. So something strange was going on, and it kept building up and building up until finally, this was a date I'll never forget, September 24th, 1980. She was being brought home from my aunt's house by my aunt, and she had her daughter with her. And this was about 10 o'clock at night. I was out somewhere, and she got out of the car and she heard this horrible sound. She said it was like a person in pain, or a moaning sound or a groaning sound. And it just went on and on and on. My cousin, on the other hand, my aunt's daughter, thought it sounded like an ape.
Wow.
So my aunt said to my grandmother, "Get back in the car, Mom." And then she locked all the doors before she could get in. She just panicked. So anyway, my grandmother ended up going into the house, and my aunt went back to get my other cousin, Barry, who had a shotgun. And so my aunt or my grandmother sat in the house with a hammer in her hand, just in case, you know, something would peek in the window or whatever. When my aunt came back with my cousin, he went up on the front porch, or the back porch, I should say, and had his gun. He heard this shrieking sound and, you know, crackling of leaves, and something was right behind the pine tree there. And he shot his gun off, and then he didn't hear anything. He just shot in the air. And then he shot again, and this time he said flame came out the end of the barrel, and the thing screamed and ran away.
Oh, wow.
Now, my grandmother later said that, and I can vouch for this, it was a full moon night. I remember the moon being the size of a basketball. Mm-hmm. And she said that she could see a shadow around the corner of the shed out back of something that was standing there, that had very long arms and no neck and kind of a conical shaped head. And that was kind of the beginning of the kinder creature, which my mother wrote a letter to a guy named Barney Fowler, who had a column. I forget what it was called, but it was about sportsmen and, you know, outdoor stuff. Mm-hmm. And he published a letter in the Times Union, a local Albany newspaper. And after that letter was published, he was swamped with letters from other people who had had similar experiences. They either heard this ungodly sound or they saw something. There was a woman who saw a creature walking in front of her car that she said looked like she described it as a highly evolved ape. Said it was swinging its arms and, you know, walking gracefully across the road.
Wow.
There was a gentleman who was fishing near a dam nearby. And this was in broad daylight. And he happened to look across the creek, and there was this thing standing there looking at him. And he said he could see it so clearly. He could see that it had black fingernails. And it just stared at him for a bit and then just walked back into the woods. This went on for a couple of years. It was covered by a syndicated TV show called PM Magazine.
I remember that show. Yeah.
Yeah. And they came and interviewed my grandmother and me and several other people in my family. And they did a segment called The Kinderhook Creature. So they were the ones who named it. And, you know, it's had a lot of witnesses. It's become pretty famous over the years. And, it was a time that was just, you know, when I think about it now, it's almost hard to believe it ever happened, but it did. And I think I mentioned in the book, it's almost like finding out that Santa Claus is real. You know, it's just so unbelievable, but there it is. Yeah. Because even I was skeptical when I first, there were first kind of mumblings about local Sasquatch type creatures back in the late 70s. And I thought, I can believe it, you know, in the Himalayas, I can believe it in Pacific Northwest, but here in upstate New York, I don't know. But then there was a time just before the incident with my grandmother with the shotgun and the whole nine yards. This was that summer. And a friend of mine was visiting from England, a lady friend. Mm-hmm. And we went outside. I was going to walk her home to where she was staying, I should say. And as soon as we got out on the porch, I heard this ungodly sound coming from the woods. And it started out like a shriek or a howl. It went into a series of guttural sounds and then kind of died out in a very low moan. And she looked at me and she said, "Is that a typical American sound to hear at night?" And I said, "No, I have never heard that before." Now, it was dark. I was not going to go looking for it
right,
at the time,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I, you know, when I think back now, I wish I had. But then again, I probably would have wet myself. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you do if you find it? That's the thing.
I know. That's that's it. I mean, what happens then?
Yeah.
You know. But so, you know, all the stuff is just building up to that one night. And then after that, I won't say it died down because a lot of people still saw it. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like gradually it got less and less. There was a very good sighting in 1983, I think it was 3 years later, when a woman driving along Route 203, which is nearby, saw a creature in broad daylight in a field, and she described it pretty well. But, you know, since the turn of the century, more or less, there haven't been that many reports. And it seems like whatever it was has moved south, because there have been a lot of reports from Dutchess County, which is just below Columbia County where I live.
Okay.
So maybe it migrated. I don't know. But or maybe it's still around. I like to think that it's still around.
Migrated or driven out of its habitat?
Chance. What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just said migrated or driven out of its habitat, maybe?
Could have been driven out of its habitat, yes, because there is now a house on the hill behind us here where I heard that sound emanating from all those years ago. And there are a lot of houses that have sprouted up. So, yeah, it could very well have been driven out. And I don't think my cousin shooting off a shotgun helped matters any, you know, because it obviously didn't like that.
No.
And I don't blame it, you know.
Yeah. Big boomstick make creature go yow.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very fascinating indeed. You know, there's always been the argument amongst the Bigfoot community that, you know, are these things, you have your apers and you have your guys who believe that maybe these things have something extraterrestrial. And you know, do these things hop dimensions, and are they really earthbound type creatures, you know? Are you dealing with an ape creature? Or are you dealing with something extraterrestrial? I take it you fall in the aper category. You think that maybe this is an offshoot of some sort of ape?
Well, I think so. I mean, there are certain things about it that seem paranormal. There are the tracks that end in the middle of a field, which can't really be explained. I don't know what happens there. Yeah, I mean, it's such a leap for me to think of them as like interdimensional. There was an investigator who looked into this back in 1981, and he was convinced that our property here is a window area to some other dimension or something. I don't know. I was never exactly clear on what he meant, but he seemed to think that they were not physical beings in the sense that we know. I don't know. I have a hard time with that because there's just no way to prove that.
Well, I think I pick up what they're putting down, and I'll tell you why, Bruce. We did a show not too long ago having to do with the fact that Bigfoot sightings and UFO sightings are completely related. And one of the things that you mention in the book is the amount of UFO sightings in the area.
Yeah. And there have been a lot of those. Yeah.
And if you would tell
Hudson Valley's a hotspot for that.
Yeah. Now, if you would tell us a little bit about some of the UFO sightings, and I'll tell you why that was said by that particular person.
Well, I can tell you about my own sighting.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, back in the 70s, again, my grandmother and I, we were looking out the dining room window of her house, and it overlooks the Catskills. And seemingly over the Catskill Mountains, there were these four or five reddish-orange balls of light that were just bouncing around. And, I mean, zipping around doing crazy things like stopping on a dime after a 180 degree turn, you know, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they would come together in a cluster, and then they would all separate. And it was almost like they were putting on a show for us. Hmm. And we watched that for must have been a good 5 or 10 minutes. I wish I had thought to get a camera. I never even thought, because I was like hypnotized. But and then gradually they just kind of dispersed and just went away somewhere. So that was my first UFO sighting, and certainly my best. But the other time, when you talk about connection between Bigfoot sightings, I went to a location that we dubbed Bigfoot Bridge because several tracks were found there.
Okay.
That I made plaster casts of, and they, you know, have never been really explained. So I went over there one night after they were found, just to see if I could experience anything. Mm-hmm. And this was really stupid of me because I was coming home from work, from a radio station, in fact. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have anything with, I didn't have a camera, I didn't have a tape recorder, I didn't have anything. I just thought I would go to the bridge and kind of sit there and see if anything happened.
Sure.
So on the way there, I should have noticed the omens. There were like frogs jumping across the road. There was a black cat that actually crossed my path. Things like that.
Okay.
But I stopped and I parked the car and I turned out the lights and I just sat there for a while. Nothing happened. And then I thought, okay, I'm gonna count to 100. And if nothing happens, I'm gonna leave. So just about the time I got up to, I don't know, 60 or 70, I heard this sound from the woods nearby, that sounded like, to me, like a group of monkeys trying to talk to each other, trying to articulate.
Yeah.
And that really raised the hackles on the back of my neck. So I really wanted to go and see what they were. I really did, but my legs wouldn't cooperate. So by the time I finally got up the nerve to exit the car and go across the road and see if I could see anything, the sound stopped. However, when the sound stopped, a white light came up from behind the trees and shot up into the sky and just kind of disappeared. So I can't explain that. I don't really have any fixed explanations for any of this stuff. It's like what Charles Ford always said, you know, I'll gather the facts, the rest is up to you. Because I don't have the expertise to explain all this stuff, but it certainly fascinates me.
That experience had to be absolutely frightening.
It was pretty scary. I didn't know what to make of it. It's hard to describe how weird that was, but it was really, really weird.
Yeah. The guest we had on was correlating the combination of the two, and that generally right before a Bigfoot sighting, you'll see UFOs, or shortly after you've seen a Bigfoot, you'll see UFOs. And a lot of them share the same portals between dimensions. And it has to do a lot with the belief that Bigfoot is an interdimensional creature, that it has nothing to do with.
There may be several different types. I don't know.
Yeah.
And again, I don't have the scientific background to really theorize about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All I know is that it fascinates me, and I love things that are unexplained.
Yeah, same here, my friend. Same here. It's a fascinating theory. It's one that continue to read up on. At first, I thought it was kind of out in left field. I didn't know whether I'd believe it or not. But the more and more I hear stories from people that they've seen something that backs this up, it's intriguing, to say the least.
Well, there are they certainly seem to happen in the same general vicinity, like. The Hudson Valley was known in the 80s for the Westchester Wing, which was a very famous UFO that was seen by thousands of people along the New York State Thruway and points north. And that's never been explained either. But it was around the same time as the Bigfoot sightings. So I don't know. I have no explanation.
There's something to be said about that, though. I mean, there really is. Why do you suppose then, Bruce, that the Hudson Valley, there is such a hot spot for that type of activity? Is it just, is there a ley line running through there? Is it some sort of mineral that attracts that type of activity, or builds the portal? Or what do you suppose that it is?
You know, I don't know. I do know that it goes back hundreds of years, at least, because, you know, the Native Americans in this area also found it to be a very spiritual and strange place. And the early settlers used to see lights on the sides of the Hudson River that they couldn't explain. Of course, you've got the story of Rip Van Winkle, which is a very famous kind of fairy tale. Mm-hmm. About little people, and little people, of course, it all goes back to the UFOs again.
Yeah.
You know, yep. I don't know. It's, I sometimes wonder, you know, how many dimensions there are we're dealing with, but it's very interesting to me.
It all is very interesting. And I tell you folks, again, if you want to, you should pick up the book and read more into this. There's a lot of different fascinating stories in this book. The book is The Kinderhook Creature and Beyond: Personal Renaissance. Our guest is Bruce Hallenbeck. And Bruce, I tell you, you've put together a heck of a book, my friend. And there's other books out there as well that you've put together as well. Tell people the names of the other books they can find by you out there.
Well, in the cryptozoological vein, there's Monsters of the North Woods, which I co-wrote, and Monsters of New Jersey, which I co-wrote with Lauren Coleman, and Monsters of New York, which I wrote on my own. Mm-hmm. And I also write a lot about films, especially classic horror films and fantasy films. So I've got, you know, like the Hammer Vampire, the Hammer Frankenstein, the Rock and Roll Monsters book, which is about American International Pictures. And I've got a book called Poe Pictures, which is obviously about Edgar Allan Poe movies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to vary the menu quite a bit.
And they're all fascinating to us too, Bruce. So we'll have links up so you can check out those books as well. Bruce, we're coming to an end here. What are your big plans here for Thanksgiving?
Well, I'm not planning on being abducted by aliens.
Oh, good. That's good.
Because they would interfere with my turkey dinner, and I love turkey. So,
oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. And please don't feed the Bigfoot. I mean,
don't do that. No. Yeah. Dangerous, especially after midnight.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to have a new friend for life. And that never ends well for some reason. I don't know why.
No.
You can be kind for a while, but it never seems to end well. I don't know why that is.
That's so true.
Yeah, that's for sure. Bruce, I want to thank you so much for being on the program tonight.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you so much. And folks, I want to thank you as well for listening tonight. Again, I'm thankful for so much today. I'm thankful for Bruce for being on the program today. I'm thankful for you for tuning in each and every episode and continuing to follow us here on Darkness Radio. You're greatly appreciated, and we love you so much here on the show and continuing to download the program. We've got big plans here coming up into the anniversary on January 1. It'll be 17 years we've been on air now, either on air or on podcasts. We, again, greatly appreciate you. We'll keep you informed as to what we've got coming up at the beginning of the year for the anniversary. Man, I'm grateful to my family, to intern Yoko, to Beer City Bruiser, Jessica Freeberg, and Mally Fox, my co-hosts. There's so much I've got to be grateful for my doctors and good health coming, much more. Folks, I'm just grateful for a lot on this Thanksgiving, and I want to thank each and every one of you and let you know I love you all. And again, thank you so much for supporting the show. We'll see you next week. We got a big week coming up. Thank you so much for tuning into the best in paranormal programming. This has been Darkness Radio.